what's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host. For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to Trust Across America, hosted by Jordan Kimmel. This program is rebuilding trust in business by highlighting organizations that are doing the right thing with regard to accounting, governance, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability. You'll learn about some of the best practices being used by the top companies right here in America. Now, here's Jordan Kimmel.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Trust Across America with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel, and now we're going on our second year already. We're deep in our second year, bringing on the leading experts in the area of trustworthy business behavior. And so we've said in the beginning that we were not trust experts, but we would continue to reach out to leading authors, folks who kind of specialize in one area or another. It's really our pleasure right now. We're going to bring on David Horsager. David is an author, an entrepreneur. He's a professor. I'm in the middle of a great read called The Trust Edge, How Top Leaders Gain Faster Results, Deeper Relationships, and a Stronger Bottom Line. And David, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. It's a treat to be on and a treat to be a part of people like you that are furthering this trust movement and seeing the value and impact and the bottom line, not just certainly ethically in other ways it's important to our culture, but seeing the impact in companies beyond the company and lives and communities and around the world.
Well, thank you for that comment. And David, let me just say, I know when I've reading your book, I think I get to know you a little bit. But I just gave you a brief introduction. One of the things I know is that not only are you thinking and a professor and writing about this just as important to me, you're inside organizations, consulting to them, taking your thoughts into real world. If you could spend a couple minutes on how you actually, your background, where you've come from, and maybe a little bit more what we don't know about you before we get into the meat of the book, The Trust Edge.
Sure. Our mission here at Horsager Leadership is to create trusted leaders in organizations. We believe when we create trusted leaders in organizations, we have helped them the best, the impact will be the greatest, the bottom line will improve, and also every part of the organization. You know, we believe when trust goes up, productivity goes up, you know, creativity, innovation, skepticism goes down, costs go down, time to market, you know, all those things go down. So we really want to help organizations be most trusted. What do we do here? I do a ton of kicking off and closing conferences, keynote speaking, just because supposedly I'm kind of entertaining and engaging, and I came out of producing shows in the entertaining realm, and now I speak about the serious topic of trust. You know, I guess one of the leading experts on it, and I've did all my graduate research on this topic and how there's a lot on what destroys trust, but how do we actually build it in organizations? So we do that in several ways. I do a lot of speaking, but out of my company we do a lot of we do some significant consulting, coaching top executives and salespeople and leaders. I have a 360 assessment we use that can help increase the trust edge climate, and then we really try to institutionalize a trust edge climate in an organization. And we've seen where people have, tripled their sales conversions. We've seen productivity go up. We've seen real results when people increase their trust just a little bit. So that, from that standpoint, that would be part of the answer of our company. Me personally, hey, I grew up on a crop farm in north central Minnesota, youngest of six kids. I love the farm still as much as I live in a suburb of Minneapolis, St. Paul. love riding horses and fly fishing and that farm background. But, I've got four kiddos, beautiful kids. They're 2, 4, 6, and 8 right now. The school year's starting, as you know, and, I had directed an organization after college. Then I started another company back in Minnesota, producing events all over the world and halftimes of NBA games and all that kind of thing. And then, always had this enjoyment of leadership and seeing how top leaders get results and motivate their teams and are productive. And then I basically, 2003, had this epiphany about trust and how it really is the biggest impact. I thought I was the first. Now you've seen some others, and you've even had them on the show, but kind of was the first to tie trust to the bottom line. Did all my graduate research on that and kind of, in my experience, found these 8 uniquenesses of the greatest leaders in organizations. We'll talk about those later, I'm sure, but basically then my graduate research came out on the 8 pillars, and the book just came out in the first form at the end of 2009, where actually then it got picked up by a publisher, then a bigger publisher, and now we're having a national relaunch tomorrow, September 1st, and it's been just fun to see how that's gone, and it's been picked up in India and other places in the world, and the message is resonating. It's timely and timeless. It's not about me, but this message is powerful, and it's been fun to see. And you saw the book. I mean, it's fun to have a book that's not like all the other business books that looks just black on white. It's got some red. It's got the tabs. It's engaging, but it's based in research, but it's made really bullet point, bottom line friendly to get results right now. So.
Right. So that's a great background for where we want to get to right now, and I appreciate taking the time. And I definitely hear the responsibility from the farm teaches a lot about all working together, because if one piece of the farm doesn't work, the whole thing doesn't work. But what I want to get into, right here, David, is that 3 years ago when I said that bear markets and bull markets happen, but this is different. When the market comes back, the people won't come back because trust on Wall Street has been broken, and we still haven't solved that, obviously. But, David, here's the key. We said we want to try to look at mathematically, quantitatively, trying to assess the most trustworthy companies, and people came back and said, wait a second, there's not even a uniform definition of trustworthy business behavior, let alone nobody's tried to measure it yet. So let's kind of start in the beginning. Before we get to the 8 pillars, what I want to do is kind of cover them in the second part of our discussion after a break, so we have a lot of time to get into them. But I guess I'll start by saying, do you have the definition of trust in your opinion, trustworthy business behavior?
Well, my definition, the simplest one I know, and the way I define it in the book, is a confident belief in, a confident expectation of, really this confident belief in you to do the same thing, to deliver the same thing, to speak the same way. We trust consistency because you do it the same, for good or bad, so you're late all the time. I trust you to be late next time. You deliver all the time. You say the same thing when I'm around or when that person is around or in that committee. I trust that you'll always say the same thing. But if you're different all the time, I don't trust you because you're so inconsistent. Now, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking generally. So, the simple definition is a confident belief in. I am so delighted to hear from you and hear of your work and hear the way you're trying to quantify it. I thought in 2003, I was the only one really doing this kind of thing. I have learned since then there have been others of us really trying to quantify it. And certainly in studies by Watson White and others that you've seen, I'm sure, in this realm, and so have many of us that have enjoyed seeing the impact of trust. But in my graduate research, I tried to quantify it, and Covey's team tried to quantify it, and there's others that have been thinking about this. The Rainas out east, maybe have been some of the trust experts that have studied trust the longest, as far as a couple. So there have been people that have seen this, but it's really come into some of us, we're doing it on our own, and this is so fun to come together and look at this. Now the body of work in the early, 10 years ago, it was really about what destroys trust, what destroys trust. And now a few of us, though we thought we were on our own, there were others, you and us and people out east and Central America that have been thinking about what actually does build it, what actually grows it in a team, in an organization, because here's why. It does affect the bottom line, and we can find simple examples and analogies to prove that, and we can also find statistics that prove it, and you're doing studies, and we're doing studies that prove it out. So I believe trust is the single uniqueness of the greatest leaders and organizations of all time. I believe it is the key bottom line indicator, as well as the key indicator of impact over time. So anyway, what's interesting is I think it's so great the way you have tried to tie it to metrics and show it, because it's given it more legs, something that some of us knew intuitively. Proving it out, it's just so valuable because it's gotten the attention of CEOs and top companies and top organizations. I deal with some of the, Wells Fargo and Homeland Security and, Ameriprise and Best Buy, all these big companies that once they see these indicators that you've proved out and that we've proved out and some of us together have shown, they see this message not just as timely and timeless, but as not a soft skill, a bottom line, impactor that they got to pay attention to.
Right. So, David, this is what I want to get into, because after the break, we're going to get into really the pillars, and maybe we'll even compare it with the drivers that we've come up with. But you touched on something that's very interesting, and some people will say, look, we can actually measure how many carbon footprints we have based on this. We can do this and that. But when it comes to trust, which we think is kind of the bigger issue, people do say, hey, that's soft, or hey, we don't want to go there. Why do you think that is? And maybe you want to address that issue itself.
Well, I mean, I think trust, like even leadership or engagement or some of these other big kind of names over the last 20 years, titles, are seen in a way as a soft skill. It's not as easy to quickly quantify in some ways, and I'll give you a few examples that are, easy to kind of quantify, or kind of see the quantifiability. But, when I take a process and say, okay, put one washer on at a time, now let's put five on at a time. Look, the time to getting the washers on changed. Look, we changed our productivity specifically by changing the process, right?
Right.
And that's easy to hard skill quantify. We taught the person or the robot to put five on at a time instead of one out at a time. Hey, if we can give you a process that puts five on instead of one, would you want it? Look at you save five times your time cost. Well, that's a hard skill. But I don't believe it is. I believe it does impact the bottom line. I don't believe it's a soft skill. And I believe people need to see that. Some quick fun examples might just be like, look, you think Tiger Woods, you think trust doesn't affect the bottom line, ask Tiger Woods. A breach of trust, or 25 breaches of trust, and he lost millions in weeks, hundreds of millions by now. Your credit score, it's quick to see how it's really a trust score. The more you're trusted by the bank, the less you pay over the course of the loan. And, I've got that example of the book, and on only a $200,000 home, just by having a little higher trust score or credit score, you pay $115,000 less over the course of the loan.
Right.
And so that shows it. You see other things with time. People have used all kinds of different examples. Some of us have used Jason Kotke's quick example of his, the coffee and donut stand where
David, so let me do this.
People
we're going to come up on a
change,
commercial
the time
break.
Goes down, the costs go down. And so you can prove it with analogies, but those analogies cannot be avoided as far as how they point to the bottom line impact. Now there's other bigger, deeper studies that have proved it out more, and so you have to find some metrics to go on, and you look at
those. Okay, David, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick little break. We're coming up to a sponsor break here, so let me cut you off here. I think you're right on the money in terms of quantifying it, because I think you have to do that to get people's attention.
Sure.
We are talking with David Horsager. He's the author of The Trust Edge. David, maybe there's a website during the next segment people might want to peek at while we're going through more about the book and more of the eight pillars of trust. You want to mention a website right here?
TheTrustEdge.com is the easiest to spell, TheTrustEdge, E-D-G-E.com. My name also, DavidHorsager.com, but the easiest to spell on the radio is TheTrustEdge.com.
Right. No, I had a little trouble with your name yourself. You're exactly right. TheTrustEdge.com, we're with David Horsager. We'll be right back following this quick commercial break.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
Go behind the scenes of what you see, hear, and read on the news. Learn the ins and outs of public relations on Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Cindy Rakowitz is a Clio Award winner and founder of Rock and Roll Public Relations, who wants to share her PR experiences and knowledge with you. Learn how to handle a crisis, deal with celebrities, and become a terrific PR executive. Listen to the Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time here on News Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain inspired really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to the Trust Across America radio program hosted by Jordan Kimmel. We encourage your participation to this program. Call in during the live show to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also direct your emails to Barbara at trustacrossamerica.com. Now, back to Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back to Trust Across America with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. We're having a great conversation right now with David Horsager, and David is not only an author, an entrepreneur, and a professor, but also a consultant going inside both private companies, public companies, and organization, and really delivering a content that's really based around some very tangible things, David. This is what I appreciate the most. We came up working with a group of experts on what we felt were the five drivers. I'm reading through your book, which, by the way, it's got a lot of humor in it. I love the way it reads. You're talking about eight pillars of trust, and rather than just naming them all, David, maybe the thing to do is to get into a couple of them, and maybe if there's a couple in particular that's not a favorite, but maybe, you know, part of the foundation behind all of them. Why don't you talk about the pillars and the whole discussion of them?
Sure. First of all, I would say they all are important. All eight. You can see quickly how, you know, some people, when I ask people, well, what do you think trust is? And the first thing someone will say is honesty, or they'll say reliability, they'll say whatever. But it's what builds it isn't as easy as you might think. Character is one of the pillars. And it's very important, and it is very true. And people think, they try to trick me and say, well, what about this Enron or Madoff or that? And look at, they were successful for a while. It never lasts, and there's always unsuccess even right away. So for Madoff, if you look at his life way earlier, there was, because he had it lacking in that pillar, he had much more pain and regret, you know. So, but what I was going to say is that isn't the only pillar for good reason. It's the reason that, you know, I might trust, you know, Jordan or Barbara, I might trust you with my kids for the weekend because of your character, but I won't trust you to give me a root canal because of your competency. So there's, you got to look at that other pillar. And what I feel like, and, you know, we all come to things slightly differently, but, we, you know, some things we're very similar on with your five, and for good reason, because they come out of our, you know, research, and they come out mm-hmm. of what we see in organizations. But anyway, all eight are very important. It's worth, to me, in the way I framed it, it's important to look at all eight. If I was going to take a couple favorites or a couple that I think are really important, is the consistency pillar is the king of the pillars. Because, for instance, inconsistent, any of the other pillars are weak pillars. Inconsistent character is no character at all. Inconsistent compassion really isn't that caring. However, that compassion, the pillar that shows that you think beyond yourself, is a very important pillar. We see that's why we more quickly, often, trust, for instance, firefighters and nurses over mortgage brokers and lawyers. Now, you can find a trusted lawyer or mortgage broker, and when you do, you find one with that, with all eight pillars, and you find a very successful one in impact and almost always in the bottom line. So this idea of consistency, you know, why we trust McDonald's, because they give us the same burger everywhere, why we trust the little things done consistently. There's so many things about that pillar that I see as so important. Another pillar that comes to mind, just to maybe hit on another one, and I love them all and I believe in them all, but is clarity. The reason I bring up clarity is it is one that you can change things in an organization quickly and see results quickly, and most organizations and most people think they're clearer than they are, whether it's in expectations or in their vision or in their, for instance, a salesperson, they think they share the benefits, but they're not clear on the benefits to that person, to the possible buyer. And if they were just absolutely clear, they would sell more. And so I think clarity, I mean, people trust the clear and they mistrust or distrust the ambiguous. Clarity unifies, clarity inspires, clarity is so powerful, and it's one of the easiest to change. For instance, compared to commitment, some people will have me come in and say, just get everybody to be committed to me, just get everybody to be, you know, can we just be Harley Davidson or Apple or American Doll, some of those companies that have such great fan bases and great commitment, just tell everybody to be committed to us. Well, you don't get commitment by saying it, you get commitment by being committed to them first, to your team, to your, you know, this there's a big breach of commitment to in the American auto world where people, you know, that worked there for 40 years, all of a sudden they cut their pensions, and that was our grandparents, some of us probably. So all of a sudden there's no commitment to American auto dealers. We don't care if we buy from Japan or anywhere else where there used to be big commitment in America there. So I'm jumping around a little bit, but
right. But let me try to help
clarity.
You
can see results.
Let me try to help you in the last 5 minutes here. So the thing I'm thinking about is that you do give some examples of companies and individuals that you do think are really going beyond doing things right, but doing things in a really trustworthy way. And so you give a couple of examples you shared before the show started, but maybe you want to talk about just a couple of them and what you think really sets them apart and why the public can actually feel their authenticity that you feel with their trustworthiness. Maybe you want to give us a couple good examples.
Well, and usually they shine all the pillars, but they might have one that shines really brightly. So, you know, let's think about Caribou Coffee, since I talked about clarity and highlighted clarity. Mm-hmm. Let's Caribou Coffee is second biggest to Starbucks in North America. Now, several states don't even have Caribous, but where you have a Caribou coffee shop, it's different than the rest. They deliver differently. Why do they do it? There are several reasons, but let's look at one example. One example would be they teach those 15, 16-year-old baristas how to deliver excellence every time through a simple acronym, and people do it. You know, this is fast food and coffee shops. It's high turnover. There's all these things going against them to really deliver sameness, to deliver consistency. And Caribou came up with this simple BAMA, B-A-M-A. They teach every barista BAMA. The B, first B stands for be excellent, not average. The next A stands for act with urgency. So when you buy a coffee at Caribou, time it and go buy a mocha mm-hmm. or coffee at one of the other shops and time it, and you'll see you'll get your coffee sooner, delivered okay. with a smile, because the M in Bama stands for make a connection. And so they ask questions, they make a connection, and they do it quite authentically and genuinely for these 15, 16-year-olds that you know how difficult it is often to train them to think beyond themselves. They do an mm-hmm. amazing job. The final one, the final A is to anticipate needs. So would this person like a water, free water with their coffee? Would this person like to have something else? Would they like to be treated differently? Or, oh, they come in all the time. They always want a large dark mocha, so I'll just make it ahead of time for them. You know, they have these four simple things. So not this big convoluted vision statement. They have one. They have a mission statement. But the thing that everybody remembers is BAM, and because it's so clear, those frontline baristas act differently. And because they act differently, we all have a better experience by going to Caribou Coffee.
Right. Now, that happens to be just a great example. I think that's beautiful. And here's what I really want you to do here, you know, because it's amazing how fast half hours can go, David. And what I want to do is I want to kind of tie this all together. You know, I noticed that we all talk about the trust breakdown and the need to bring trust back. There's another area where we're not going to spend a long time on it, but, you know, either there's barriers or the management doesn't get it. So I think that what's happening is maybe we had such a breakdown in trust that it creates a learnable moment, an opportunity for experts like yourself to really help people understand what are beneath the drivers of trust, what are the pillars of trust, actually getting it right. And I want to give you just a kind of couple of minutes together maybe to tie it together. Let's give them a call to action and then remind them again, you know, one more time on your website. So I'm going to give you a couple minutes to tie it together.
Okay. Well, it is my fundamental belief that a lack of trust is your biggest expense. And I don't care if that's at home or if it's at work, home with your family, out in the community. A lack of trust is your biggest expense. And when you see that, when you start to see the costs of low trust and you start to see the impact of going up just a little bit, see, every time, every interaction we have with everyone, we increase or decrease just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Every time we talk to our kids, every time we communicate through a piece of media, every time we give a marketing piece, every time we answer the phone, we increase or decrease trust just a little bit. And let me tell you, the incredible impact of increasing trust is it will affect your bottom line. It will affect the impact of your life. And I think trust is the uniqueness of the greatest people, greatest leaders, greatest organizations of all time. So my call would be, I am so grateful for Trust Across America, and that this message is getting out further and further. I'm grateful for the people that are, you know, grabbing our books and having me speak and others speak on this great topic. I know the importance of being engaging and entertaining and fun in the midst of that, but what I'm most passionate about is sharing this serious, true topic that I see tripling people's sales and making people more effective and increasing productivity and increasing impact around the world. And so that's what I'd say. Learn the eight pillars. Build the eight pillars. They aren't as complicated as you might think. In fact, they're quite simple. Look, I came up with them, but really they came out of the research. And just think of how you can build those eight into your life, into your company, into your organization, and see what the results are. My website, you wanted that?
Please.
It's thetrustedge.com, www.thetrustedge.com, or davidhorsager.com, davidhorsager.com, and there's lots of free stuff on our site, free available things, and in fact, tomorrow there's a free thing that goes out. If you buy the book tomorrow, then you get a bunch of free pieces with it because
fantastic.
It's a,
well, David, let me
national.
Just say this. Congratulations on the big launch tomorrow. We're glad to be right there with you for it. You're truly a professional. I could see why, in fact, you are known as a designation here as a certified public speaker, professional. Great half hour, and from our side of Trust Across America, we're really interested in what you do. We hope to work closely with you in the future, and we thank you so much for your time. And by the way, also good luck with all the kids getting back to school, and we really commend you for just a great effort and great to talk to you today.
Thank you, Jordan.
Alrighty. And folks, we do need to go to the commercial break. We need to bring our sponsors in. When we come back, we'll be with Faye Feeney, the CEO of Risk for Good. And one more time, a big thank you for David Horsacker. We'll be right back following this quick break.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Frankly Speaking About Cancer is a program designed to empower survivors and their caregivers to deal with the social and emotional challenges of cancer. Drawing on resources from wellness communities throughout America and abroad, the show will invite physicians, researchers, nurses, social workers, patients, and caregivers to share their advice on how to live a better life with cancer. Join host Kim Tibaldo, President and CEO of the Wellness Community, Tuesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Network.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment rising to levels not seen since the Great Depression.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you a real sports fan? Get ready to talk football and anything else sports with Kwame Lassiter. Formerly with the Arizona Cardinals, San Diego Chargers, and St. Louis Rams, Kwame's got the experience, so he's prepared to talk sports with you. Every week on Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk. It's on the Voice America Sports Network every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time. Get ready for unpredictable fun and sometimes a sarcastic look at the world of sports. That's Kwame Lassiter's Sports Talk on the Voice America Sports Network.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to the Trust Across America radio program hosted by Jordan Kimmel. We encourage your participation to this program. Call in during the live show to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also direct your emails to Barbara@trustacrossamerica.com. Now, back to Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back, everybody, to Trust Across America with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And as we look into trustworthy business behavior, there's so much importance and so much discussion about board-level involvement. It is our pleasure right now to bring on Faye Feeney. And Faye is the CEO of Risk for Good, an advisor to corporate board members, really trying to improve board performance. What an important issue. And Faye, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Jordan. And what a great show. Really enjoyed your first guest.
Well, we appreciate that. We're looking forward to a half hour together, but I didn't give you any justice at all in terms of your background and expertise. We know about Risk for Good, but Faye, if you wouldn't mind, without being shy also, give us a little bit more of your background, your experience, and how you came to form Risk for Good, and please share that with us.
Oh, thank you, Jordan. Risk for Good is built on a foundation of risk management and safety, health, and environmental expertise. I've spent 30 years working from the back office to the loading docks, really seeing the impact when people are not being led properly and their organizations aren't resourced appropriately. And with that, I took all of the years of talking with executive management and decided 2 years ago that it was really time to talk to board chairs, lead directors, and the people who are going to be making influence over CEO decisions.
Right. And so let me bring out, because we're going to get into this, it's such a meaty discussion here. People look at, you know, right now, issues as small as and as big as, does the CEO actually sit on their own compensation board? You know, who's really looking out for the company the most? Is it the board, or is it actually the management? So I know that your whole advisory firm serves the board chairs kind of in their effort. And how did you decide and why did you decide to focus more on the board leadership?
So, great question. In spending time in my governance education, it became clear to me that the board chair sets the agenda for the boardroom.
Mm-hmm.
And for the agenda to be reset, time needed to be spent with her or him. So, in thinking about how I would take my expertise to the boardroom, it became clear to me that conversation had to happen with the person who sets the agenda.
Right. It's got to be leadership from the top, and that really makes sense. But you know what I realized in our introduction, Faye, and something that I kind of skipped, and I think we should go back and really make sure we understand this. You have a couple titles behind your name that not everyone is familiar with, including me. You are a CSP and an ARM. So I know one of them has to do with speaking, but can you share both of those designations for us?
So the CSP that I have is the Certified Safety Professional. Certified Safety Professional, and that lines up with my work as a safety, health, and environmental expert.
Oh, fantastic.
So the safety and health field is working very diligently on the technical end to make sure that the workplace is protecting people, property, and the environment. And as a certified safety professional, it is a designation that says that I've sat through exams and curriculum to keep that designation. One of the things that I continue to do, even though I've transitioned mostly to the boardroom, is I serve as vice chair of our American Society of Safety Engineering Foundation, so that we're investing in the future for the profession. The ARM is the Associate in Risk Management, and it speaks to the protocols of risk management, including enterprise risk management, which is really a framework that I bring to board chairs as they think about how to look at modern technology that's social, mobile, global, and analytical.
Wow. You know, I'm actually, you know, really interested in what you're saying, and I'm sorry, I thought the speaking was a certified speaking professional. The safety and the risk management coming together, Faye, from the board level, I think is so key, and I think that this is a great piece, because I think a lot of times board members are kind of unaware of maybe the hidden risks of management taking shortcuts, you know, trying to maybe maximize earnings and not really protecting the hidden risks that become exposed. And so, you know, I think that when we think about board members and how boards work, a lot of us, frankly, Faye, are not that familiar with it. So maybe want to share couple of the biggest challenges that you see actually in the boardroom, say this year, and maybe how things have changed maybe going forward?
So I think that the biggest challenge that we're facing is the fact that board composition has been built within a technology that was much more of a face-to-face relationship. And it it certainly makes sense to me, Jordan. I mean, these are extremely important jobs. And the people that you want to have in the room, for the most part, at that level, would be people that you would have either known or other people would have known.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty, that was working pretty good in the industrial age. But certainly now that we're moving into a technological age, what we're finding is that we really are going to need to open the door because people are looking into the boardroom. The jobs have become more complex, and we need a variety of different skills around the table to make sure that the best decisions are getting made.
Right, right. And, you know, I think about the enormity of certain corporations, all different continents, hundreds of thousands of employees sometimes in case. You know, the scope of a business, the not only the current operations, but going forward and setting an agenda and long-term plan. I think it's amazing. I'm curious if I could ask, over your career and maybe even, you know, the whole organization, Risk for Good, how many boards have you actually kind of worked with over the course of your career? I mean, just kind of rough numbers. And, you know, following up with it, do you sometimes come across boards where, frankly, the board members really aren't either technically or, in your opinion, fit to sit on the boards?
Sure, sure. So let me, if you will, reframe this answer to a question that I can't answer.
Sure.
So when I'm working with the board chair, it is a really very much a private conversation that we're going to have around what their vision for the future is.
Okay.
So I am not in the boardroom.
Gotcha.
Right. But I do at times get an opportunity in the course of let's just take a specific example. Let's say that the board chair understands the impact of a social, mobile, and global world and is an early adopter, which is really the kind of the characteristic of the board chair who's going to engage me. And they decide that their board really needs to be brought up to speed about what is, for example, Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
The only way we're going to let people understand new technology is that you have to take some time with them and show them. So
right.
I would only get an assessment of an individual on a one-to-one basis. I wouldn't
right.
be able to make any organizational assessments about how a team would work together. But I can get feedback from the chair and give them guidance about what areas may be exhibiting resistance to new ideas or what may be areas that that need to get further attention and not be left to the end.
Right, fantastic. And, Faye, I really appreciate you clarifying it because it's much different, and now I'm recognizing more to the point that your real focus is on the chair and the leadership of the board and really not playing a family therapy with a full board and trying to organize the board as a facilitator. You're really focusing on the chair of the board. I understand that better now. If you could, we're going to go to a quick commercial sponsor break. If you wouldn't mind, why don't you share maybe some websites? I'm guessing that Risk for Good has its own website. Maybe there's something else that you want to share as well.
Sure. Well, thank you, Jordan. I've got a website at www.riskforgood, all one word. And there I have resources specific for board chairs and corporate counsel. I've got my, I hope you'll take a moment and take a look at some of the boardroom videos. We have a Mr. Chairman series that we use a animated version to help people understand very complicated ideas in a very fun format.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on Twitter at FayFaySeeNey.
Fantastic. And we're talking right now with Faye Feeney. She's the CEO of Risk for Good. We'll take a quick commercial break. And, Faye, when we get back, I kind of want to go a little further into some of the demands for the board leaders. And, boy, there's a lot of them. And we really appreciate your time here on the show. We'll be right back right after this quick commercial break.
Thank you, Jordan.
Talk.
That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Are you wondering if that MBA keeps you on the forefront of today's marketing innovations? Marketing has become a complex combination of both art and science. Our program will break these concepts down into bite-sized solutions that you and your business can actually use. Listen to Bite-Sized Marketing every week, where Brandon LaRocque and his guests will demystify the latest developments in marketing technology for today's internet age. Tune in to Bite-Sized Marketing live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to the Trust Across America radio program hosted by Jordan Kimmel. We encourage your participation to this program. Call in during the live show to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also direct your emails to Barbara at trustacrossamerica.com. Now, back to Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back, everybody, to Trust Across America with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel, and we're having a conversation right now with Faye Feeney, and Faye is the CEO of Risk for Good, a firm that really specializes on advising directly to board chairpersons and improving board activities and board responsibilities. And Faye, let me kind of ask you this question. It came up in a lot of reading I've done. Is you go back to 20 years ago, if we don't even go back that far, but where all the information from companies came from command and control and maybe their PR and IR, and they disseminated all information. Now we're in a different environment. It's flatter. It's more transparent. There's 24-hour blogging and news and media. Maybe you want to talk a little bit how different and the challenge maybe for board and board chairs, the reaction to news, the reaction in time frame and transparency, it's all different. Maybe you want to kind of talk a little bit about that if you could.
Sure. Well, I think one of the things that I want the folks listening to understand is that there have been people speaking about good governance for as long as we've had the boardroom. I am a huge fan of Ira Milstein, who runs the program at the Yale Milstein Center. And Ira has the leadership on the Chairman's Forum, which has really, it really guided me in focusing on board chairs. And one of the challenges that people have in the boardroom is that there's so much requirement to focus on compliance mandates that it takes a really great leader to look at voluntary initiatives. And the impact of technology, the impact of mobile devices and the ability of people to be connected and to be able to see what you're doing has changed people's focus into these voluntary initiatives. One of the things that I wrote on last month, I wrote a blog post, How to Tell Board Chairs Your Digital Zipper is Down. And And with this, thank you, Jordan. This came about because there's so many of us who understand where technology is going that I really feel strongly that it's our job to not act as gatekeepers and let people who are uninformed stay uninformed.
Okay.
And that really what we can do, whether a board chair is our grandfather or our father or our husband or our wife, is that we've got to help them understand that that when they express a lack of knowledge in their role about the impact of technology, that really they need to rethink how they're going to be a trustworthy leader in the 21st century. I mean, one of the big challenges around being in the boardroom is that you've got to be able and willing to look at what's called asymmetrical information.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're engaged anywhere with people in leadership and you're sensing that their only source of information is information that is fed to them, it really is time to help them understand that they need to take a look at other opportunities to stay informed and to stay current. I look at the model around risk when I talk to board chairs about how is the way they're behaving, is it making them susceptible to harm by not focusing on a, for example, technology risk? What's the consequence if they stay in this mode? What are some of the barriers they see? Is it a belief? Is it the people around them? And what could we do to connect them to benefits so that they understand that they're going to need to bring a bias to learning into their boardroom, and it begins with them.
Right. And, you know, you're bringing up, I think, putting your finger right on a big pressure point, which is, you know, how engaged are board members? Are they just picking up checks? Are they doing enough work? Are they spending enough time preparing for meetings? And you know, maybe, you know, I know that something you've referenced even talks about maybe they're not spending enough time on it. Maybe, you know, what you can kind of bring this together in answering it is, I know that you focus on maybe different size companies, or maybe you can kind of share the focus of right now your work, Risk for Good. Is it nonprofits? Is it privates? Is it private equity? You know, tell us, you know, who and who you're serving the most, who you can help the most, maybe.
So I think what we'll do is if we'll take all of those categories,
mm-hmm.
and we think about who is the either current chair or the person who will be chair, and what is it that they want to accomplish. And whether they're operating in a large Fortune 100 or a large nonprofit, if they want to take on the opportunity to make changes, do early adoption, and really create the modern boardroom for the 21st century, that's my client.
Gotcha, gotcha. And that's a pretty bold, you know, initiative. Someone really, what you're saying also when I hear you say that is that you can kind of lead a horse to water. You can't make them drink. This is for folks that want to go to the next level, know they want to go to the next level. Maybe you could advise them and coach them, but they actually have to be committed to coming to the next level with you.
Right. Well, they want to. They need to understand that they are going to need to stay in an active learning state to be able to be relevant in the future.
Right.
They're not going to make it with their current knowledge stock. They're going to have to refresh it, and they're going to have to extend the sources of information that they currently have.
Right. And Faye, you know, listen, you know, we could all be a little ignorant, those of us who haven't spent that much time in boardrooms. When I think of a board of directors for whether it's a public corporation, a nonprofit, I'm thinking about, you know, really high-level thought leaders, folks that are willing to spend the time. They're certainly taking a huge amount of responsibility and risk, whether they know it or not. I think they know that more these days, and I think that you're right. You have to really prepare. You have to use all the information sources that are out there. You can't just go through the old command and control. What we do have, Faye, is we have a couple of minutes left. I want you to kind of one more time bring it home for us, tie it up, and also share your contact information before we run out of time. I'd like you to do that for us now, if you could.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So the person that Risk for Good is looking to support and help develop is that boardroom leader that is courageous enough to know that the world has changed, whether it's social, whether it's mobile connectivity, whether it's analytics that are out there, is that their inability to grasp this is going to cost their company time, money, and goodwill. So all of us know or have an ability to influence these people, and what I want to ask you to do is when you see these people who want to make progress, that you let them take a minute and show them Risk for Good at www.risk4good, or come and follow me at Faye Feeney, and let's just start this conversation. This is not something that we invite people to without a lot of understanding of the barriers they have to overcome to move forward. We're all really working hard to stay relevant and stay current. And Risk for Good is there specifically for the boardroom leaders and for corporate counsel to help ensure good governance and good trustworthy decisions.
Well, fantastic, Faye. Liz, we want to thank you on behalf of all the listeners and Trust Across America for joining us today. I think it's a great discussion. And by the way, one thing that we found is that we feel sometimes board members aren't even sure how current companies stand in terms of how they look to outside folks. Are they trustworthy according to our five drivers of trust? And we have got reports for nearly 3,000 companies at this stage showing them where they look from our eyes. But I think, Faye, what you're doing is you're coming from the chairman's eyes, chairperson's eyes, really bringing it together. And if you haven't been over, Faye, by the way, to trustacrossamerica.com lately, we ask you and all the listeners to. There's been a couple important media sightings on Trust Across America we'd like to share with everybody. So let me wish everyone a great last weekend for the summer. And I think we're doing a great job together building this ecosystem of trust. And Faye, you added to it. Thanks so much for your time today.
We hope you found some inspiration in what today's companies are doing to get it right. Please join Jordan Kimmel for another edition of Trust Across America next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week.